Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salieri Report. We bring back a man and a doctor, retired doctor, who needs no introduction here, Dr. Tom Cowan, a wonderful ally, friend, a leading light in leading Weston Price, a great doctor until he retired in 2020. And if you come to the Salieri Report, you'll see not only prior interviews, but book reviews of several of his books, which I cannot recommend to you highly enough. One, in fact, was Sally Fallon Morrell from the Weston Price Institute. And he has now escaped from the West Coast to the East Coast. And so I need you, Dr. Cowan, before we start, to introduce how we find you on the web and how we connect with you on the web, because I think that's very important.
Yeah, and thanks, Catherine. It's always a pleasure to do whatever we're doing together. and please call me Tom now that I'm retired. I always used to say, you don't go around calling, hey, plumber McGillicuddy and electrician Smith, you know, we don't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't see the point, really. What was the question?
So go through your websites. How do we find you?
Oh, drtomcowan.com and drcowansgarden.com.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, we're here to talk about several issues, starting with the electromagnetic body. And somewhere in here, we're going to talk about, do viruses exist and does it matter? And you and I started a conversation about, do viruses exist and does it matter? And it immediately led into the fact that we are missing a popular understanding of our electromagnetic body as part of our health and existence and intelligence and everything. And if there's, you know, to me, if there's anything that's missing from the freedom fighters' point of view, it's a clear picture of us as electromagnetic beings and what that means to how we sort of live our life and navigate our world. And I think that's, you know, we've spent a lot of time, I don't know if you've ever watched any of our future science offerings, but we've spent a fair amount of time on future science. Ulrich Onnegerst did a fabulous job of sort of leading that discussion. And it comes up in so many different areas related to health or COVID-19 or whatever. And it keeps coming up and it almost comes up backwards. You need to start with the big picture and work down. So why don't I just turn it over to you? When I say, what is our electromagnetic body? What does that mean? What are we talking about here?
Yeah. And if I may, since you've sort of turned it over to me, let me just say why anybody would want to talk to me about any of this stuff.
Okay.
Because this is the foundation of, seriously, everything I've done in my life since I was probably 10. And I didn't know it until about 2 years ago. I didn't know this was what I was doing. But when I look back, I can see the thread. And this is, I think, what's different about me, not totally, because I'm going to show you that it's not unique, but then pretty much most people, if not just about everybody who you ask that question. Because I decided there's two principles here. One, it's not worth my interest or time trying to figure out what is true. That the strategy here is figure out what isn't true. And then at the end of the rainbow, you end up in a place that is real and true.
Well, that sounds exactly like what Sherlock Holmes would say.
I mean, it's the Wizard of Oz.
Well, I don't relate to the Wizard of Oz. I'm much more a Sherlock Holmes person. But
let me share something then, because I actually, when I decided to go to medical school, I decided to read everything that Sherlock Holmes wrote.
Uh-huh.
And so here's what Sherlock Holmes said to Watson. By the way, Leo Tolstoy, who had a lot to say, said, Progress consists not in increase of truth, but in freeing it from its wrapping. The truth is obtained like gold, not by letting it grow bigger, but by washing off from it everything that isn't gold. That's what I'm talking about. The second one is our knowledge today is on life on a microscopic scale is based on observations made on dead tissue, which are subject to astonishingly harmful preparations. That's important. But then your friend Sherlock Holmes said, how often I have said to you that when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. And so I wrote a book, The Heart Isn't a Pump. Now, most people go at the heart like, well, the heart is a beat, is an organ of love and perception and is electromagnetic. And they do a lot of argument about that. And what I discovered, and I didn't know I was doing this method, was you have to prove without a doubt the heart is not a pump. And then what the heart is emerges like magic. And the same, I wrote a book, Vaccines Aren't Good for You. And that out of that emerges that there can't be infectious disease. The whole theory is wrong. And then I wrote a book about cancer can't be a genetic disease because you can transplant a nucleus into healthy tissue and the healthy tissue is fine. And you transplant the cytoplasm, which is not the genetic part, supposedly, and then it gets cancerous. So we know that the location of cancer is in the cytoplasm. So it can't be a genetic disease. And that tells you what you need to know about cancer. And I would on and on and on. You investigate what isn't true, and then you end up with a good understanding, and then you can build on that. And then you find that it has to be an electromagnetic body.
Well, so let me say this differently, because my experience has been slightly different. And again, I come at everything as an investment banker, not a doctor or a scientist. And that is, a great deal of the absence of health is as a result of a wide variety of different kinds of poisonings. And that is not commonly understood.
Yes.
Right. And so that's my focus. And I don't worry about, does that explain 100% or 95%? I really don't care.
Well, but what I'm saying is I'm going to demonstrate, hopefully, and I actually will, that it can't be any other way. There can't be any, there's two essentially like major causes of disease. And once you strip away what isn't true, then you see that there can't be any other explanation, just like Sherlock Holmes.
So then I would say what I have found is that the primary way that we are controlled and manipulated is through understanding and manipulating our electromagnetic reality.
Right.
And until we see that and try, the more we see that and the more we understand it, the better chance we have of being free of the control grid.
Right.
And that's my interest.
But here's what I'm saying, Catherine. I agree with that, but I want everybody at the end of this interview to know that it can't be anything but that, because right now what we have a situation is somebody like you says we're electromagnetic beings, and then somebody says we're biochemical beings, and somebody says we're well, maybe,
right?
But I'm going to show you that whole genetic in germ theory, infectious biochemical theory, hypothesis of life is incorrect. Just like the heart isn't a pump, cancer is not a genetic disease, etc. Now, the second principle is very important. I can't emphasize what I'm about to say enough. The conclusions that we draw about what exists in life have all to do with the methods that we look. In other words, what modern science and medicine and biology has failed is understanding that the way that we look for something and show that something is real has essentially no impact on what we find. And that is a fundamental and huge mistake. And so that's why my entire focus, whether it's the heart as a pump or cancer as a genetic disease, is on the methodology. How did they find that? How did they conclude that there were viruses? How did science conclude there's ribosomes? Because I'm going to demonstrate to you that there can't possibly be a structure, an anatomical structure called a ribosome.
So, but here's where you and I, here's where I come in, I get challenged by all of this. I don't have the scientific or medical knowledge to prove, for example, I'll use viruses. I know that 95% of what we're dealing with is a fraud when it comes to viruses, but I don't know that it's 100%. Now, you're confident it's 100% because you're confident viruses don't exist, whereas I don't have the scientific or medical knowledge to make that determination. I do have the knowledge financially and politically to know that 95% is a fraud. And so
that's because Catherine, you don't know the methodology and you're going to know it in 10 minutes.
We're going to disagree. Well, you can try me, but I'm a skeptic. So
that's fine to be a skeptic, but it's all about the methodology.
Well, one thing is, you know, the discussion of what's true or not between you and me, but also the other discussion is tactically, how do we beat the control grid? And I think to beat the control grid, you need to have a vision of how the electromagnetic body is manipulated by the control grid and then how to free ourselves.
And once you see that there can't be, and I'm going to show you how the electromagnetic body works. And so then you know how to free yourself. And I'm going to show you that they're using the methodology, there can't be a virus. Therefore, you don't have to worry about that. And you've unplugged yourself from the central frog.
I totally disagree. I totally disagree, but we'll get there later. So don't worry about it.
That's fine. I mean, the problem, if you don't know the methodology of how they found a virus or that to demonstrate that we have to be an electromagnetic organism, then all you can do then is argue opinions. And you're never going to win that. And that's why
I'm talking about how we help people free themselves of the control grid. That's my interest.
All you have to do is understand, not all, then you start with understanding what's real. Then you can see where you have to go. That's my point. If you don't understand what's real, you're basing this on, well, there must be a lab created virus. So yeah, they have a point and et cetera. And it's
so
nonsense.
I believe that if you could get every neighbor I've ever had in the United States to understand that, it would make absolutely no difference, but we'll get to that.
Let's
first go through the methodology and then we'll get into.
So do you want to start with how a living organism is? Let's start with the virus thing, because it's simple. It's very simple. Everybody can understand it. So, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know the answer to this, which is if I said, because it's very clear, all virologists agree on this point. How does a virologist prove the existence of a virus? Can you walk me through the steps?
No, absolutely
right.
Not.
That's the problem.
I mean, I've read them 50 times.
Right. Okay. That's the problem.
I've read this debate. I've listened to countless interviews. I've read Virus Mania, all of that. But do I retain it? No. If you want to ask me how derivatives work, I'm happy to explain that. But
and,
you know what I mean?
Right. So let me see if I can get you to know this.
Remember what Sherlock Holmes said, if I have no use for something, I get it out of the closet because there's only so much space. Okay.
Right. If you have, if there's no use for that I guess is where we disagree, because I think everybody involved in this fraud and tyranny needs to know that it's based on a lie, which is that there's a virus. That's the central lie. There's many other lies, but let's go through it. Let's
go
go
through
through
that
this.
first, but what you need to understand is what my neighbors believe is there are tiny invisible things that can make you sick, and they don't care whether you call it a virus, a bacteria, pathogen, or poison.
Right. Well, I'm going to show them that it's not that nothing like that has ever been demonstrated.
The tiny invisible things can make you sick.
Correct, called viruses.
It doesn't matter if you call it a bacteria, virus, a pathogen, or
It
poison.
completely matters. But let's get into
Not
the
to
detail.
them. Not to them.
Well, I mean, Catherine, if we're going to go into this saying there's some people who are never going to see the truth, so what should we do about them? I would say nothing because they're never going to see it. But
No,
let's
because we're trying to help them get out of the control grid.
Yeah, but if they don't want to, they don't want to. Let's just go through this so you
Okay.
can see it. So, first of all, you start by what we're doing is looking at the methods of how any virologist, and they all agree with what I'm about to say, proves the existence of a virus. So, if you're going to prove the existence of anything, you say what you're looking for, like a horse, right? You say, this is what I mean by a horse. You go to the natural ecosystem of a horse, like a pasture, and you see if you see that organism. And if you do, you can say it exists, and you can do that with a horse, a screwdriver, a frog, a bacteria. You say that a one-celled thing, with some genetic stuff inside, it moves around. That's a bacteria. You look for it in a swamp, you see it. Now, you make that definition of what a virus is, which is a, they say, replication, meaning it replicates, competent, piece of protein on the outside, genetic interior on the inside, piece of genetic material, either RNA or DNA in the inside. And it's found in people who are sick. And the way it does that is it gets into the cell, reproduces, replicates, bursts out of the cell, makes you sick. Okay. Now, like everything, we go to the ecosystem, the sick people, we say, can we find that particle? Right? Just like the horse, bacteria. Everybody agrees there is not one paper in the medical literature showing any such particle in any sick tissue, blood, fluid of a plant, animal, or human. Period. Everybody agrees with that. I can show you clips from Malone and Cole saying there's not enough viruses to see in any sick fluid. So nobody should have any misconception about that. We all have looked. There's no paper. Christine Massey has done over 200 Freedom of Information requests, CDC, NIH, researcher McGill. Can you show us a paper showing these particles, right, that we've defined from any fluid of any sick person? They all say we don't have it.
So I know several scientists who insist that viruses do exist, and
Let
I'm
me
the
tell you
same. I'm
how they
all
say it. I'll tell you
right.
what they mean. It because of course they say it, but this is the first step. Now, that step should make everybody suspicious because we have something. Maybe it's because it's too small, maybe it's because there's not enough, whatever. But we know we can't find it in the lungs of a sick person with, say, COVID. They say COVID, you cannot find SARS-CoV-2, that's the virus, in their lungs. So the question is, how do they say they have proven it exists? How have they, quote, isolated it? Now, let's get a definition of isolate. Isolate means to separate one thing from everything else. You have this pen, I separate it from that. That's an isolated, i.e., purified pen. I can then say, I know this pen exists. And if I want to know what it's made of, I can run it through an analyzer. And if I can say what it does, I can go like this. And I know what it does. So, how do they do that with a virus? So, here are the steps. It's called a viral culture. Everybody agrees it's how every virologist isolates a virus. They take fluid from a sick person or from an animal or from a plant. And typically they centrifuge it or put it through a filter paper and get rid of some of the debris. That is not an isolated virus. Nobody thinks it is. That is not a purified virus. And the reason I know that is because there are no pictures, electron microscope pictures, which is required to say that's an isolated virus. So that's not, nobody disagrees. They take that unpurified material from a sick person and inoculate, meaning spread, it on monkey kidney cells or some other cell culture, right? Then they take away the nutrients of the growing cell culture. They add, nowadays, amphotericin, it's an antifungal, and gentamicin, an antibiotic, both of which are toxic to the kidneys. And then they incubate that for 3 to 5 days. They put some other things in it like trypsin and some and fetal bovine serum to help it essentially grow. And then when they see the culture break down, right? After 3 to 5 days of unpurified snot from a sick person, a fetal bovine serum, the serum sucked out of the heart of a newborn cow, antibiotics, which are poisonous to the kidney cells, they take away the nutrients and the tissue breaks down. That is called the isolation of the virus. And that has been done thousands of times. Each time they say that proves that the virus has been isolated because they claim that only the virus in this mixture could have possibly killed the cells. So when they say they've isolated it, and I would agree there's 10,000 papers in the medical literature claiming isolation, that procedure, that methodology is what they mean. Now, the interesting thing about that is Enders, who got the Nobel Prize, not for this, but for this work, actually did the entire experiment with the kidney cells and with the fetal bovine serum and the antibiotics, and he didn't add anything from anybody with measles, right? So no virus. And it broke down exactly the same, and he said, we don't really know that the breakdown is from a virus because we just proved you get the same breakdown. Now, I just want to point out, Catherine, the scientific method means that you have a dependent variable, the effect, right, which is the breakdown of the cells. And you have an independent variable, which is the virus. So if you're going to do a mock infection, which they say they do a control, you have to do it with the virus, without the virus. Otherwise, it's not an independent variable. That has never been done. And it's obvious because they say they can't find the virus in the unpurified sample. So there's at least 6 articles in the medical literature where they do the entire viral culture without exposure to any virus, and it breaks down the same. In other words, they isolated the virus, even though there's no possibility that a virus was there. We did this, Andy and Stefan and I did the experiment again, and we showed without adding any sample from any sick person, the breakdown of the cells happened exactly the same, proving that it's not the virus. So all these isolation experiments are essentially bogus. That is okay. How they did it.
So you've explained all that.
Very clear.
And I've heard that many times. I've also heard the scientists who say viruses exist. And as far as I'm concerned, I could not get in a court of law and describe the two sides and make a case for which one is right. And for me, it's completely and utterly irrelevant to anything I'm trying to accomplish in this world, because they either exist or they don't. But from my neighbor's point of view, you know, they believe.
But hang on, Catherine. Which part of that did you not understand?
I heard everything you said. I listened very carefully.
I saw that. But which part isn't clear?
It's all clear. It's clear what you said. I heard it. In other words,
then if somebody says, no, we isolated a virus, you would say, how did you do that?
Tom, what I'm saying is I'm not competent to walk into a court of law and lay out a case on what both sides are saying and reconcile them. That's what I'm telling you.
But I am.
Now, you are, but I'm not. And I'm not willing to take that because I know how much time it would take me to figure out how to do that. And I'm not willing to take the time to do that right now. Not in 2023. Because I think I could, if I did that, it would accomplish absolutely nothing. In other words, the result of that would be have not 1 ounce of impact on whether we could stop the control grid or free people out of the control grid. And that's what I'm trying to tell you why. My neighbors, all my neighbors need to know is that they can be made sick by some tiny invisible thing. And they don't care whether it's a bacteria, a virus, a poison, a pathogen. They don't care what the name is. And so here's the question. Can a tiny invisible thing make a human sick? In my experience, the answer is yes. Right?
Well, but not a virus.
Yeah, but it doesn't. They're just worried about tiny invisible things that make them sick. In other words, there are things that are making them sick that they cannot see. There are a variety of people in the world who are making these things intentionally to make them sick.
I think, you know, I mean, maybe we should move on because what we're talking about here is I'm trying to figure out what's real. And essentially what I'm hearing is you're saying that people don't care what's real. And so we have to play to them.
No, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying of the 1,000 things I know that I want to know what's real, of which this is one of them, I have to sequence my investment of time and energy in getting to the bottom of what's real according to what adds value, according to what optimizes. And if 20 things can help me back millions of people out of the control grid and 20 things have no impact on backing things out of the control grid, I'm going to focus on the 20 things that can back people out of control grid. Because what I'm trying to do is make sure we can be free. That's what I care about.
So here's the problem. When you ask the question, can tiny things make people sick? I would say, for instance, arsenic is a tiny thing, right? I've never seen it. I don't know anybody who even has. Maybe you could see it.
I've been
somehow
poisoned several times with arsenic, so
yeah,
I know
so
about
that. Right. So that is a tiny thing. Now, here's the difference. As far as I know, nobody has suggested you can, quote, vaccinate anybody against arsenic. Whereas with viruses, they say you can.
Well, of course, it's a fraud. The whole thing's a fraud.
Right. And how do we know it's a fraud? Well, because a lot of reasons, but one of which is if you go down the list of arsenic and, you know, 5G radio waves and lead poisoning and lots of tiny invisible things, none of them, anybody is claiming you should inject somebody with more poison to make them immune.
Yes, they are.
And this one, they are.
No. They're doing it on other things. I mean, there are all sorts of ways people are being poisoned, and then the solution is to take more pharmaceuticals, which poison them.
Yeah, but
further.
Because of a virus, they don't say they're inoculating you against arsenic.
No, but people are being poisoned every day, and they go to the doctor, and the doctor says the solution is to give them more poison, which is not a vaccine; it's a pharmaceutical or something else.
Because of a virus.
No. Because in other
yes,
words,
because they say this will protect you against a virus.
No, only on the vaccines. But what I'm saying is people are being poisoned with lots of other things on the theory that that's some kind of solution for the poisoning they're struggling with.
Right. But the reason they allow themselves to be poisoned is because they've been erroneously told it will protect them against a virus.
No. It's got nothing to do with vaccines. It's got to do with the fact they're sick for a variety of reasons, most of which I believe they're being poisoned. And then they go to the doctor who says, oh, you have a disease, and it's not necessarily caused by a virus. And here's your solution, which just poisons you further. So this game is bigger than just viruses and vaccines. It's much bigger.
But the vaccine, of course, it's bigger. But the vaccines, for a variety of economic reasons, among others, has become the go-to pharmaceutical because it's the most lucrative and the most widespread. And so what I'm saying, and I don't know how long we should go into this, because I think I can tell you're never going to be convinced that once people know there's no viruses, it means anything. And I can tell you, Catherine, I am never going to be convinced that once the world knows there's no viruses in a scandemic that's based on a virus, that makes no difference. I can't see that.
I think understanding that was a huge breakthrough for you and really helped you. And I think anytime we get to the truth on any subject, it always helps people. It's always better.
I don't know. I've been in this game for 40 years. My daughter is 40. I didn't get her a Social Security card. I didn't put her in the system. I didn't have her get any vaccines. I am not a newcomer to this sucks.
Right, but here's my point of view on this. My point of view is I see the control grid coming to control people. And one of the reasons that the control grid is doing such a great job of moving in and controlling people is the people who are designing and operating the three different legs that I describe are masters of understanding how to manipulate both our physical and electromagnetic bodies. And we don't understand that the whole universe is electromagnetic and we're constantly getting tricked, of which this is one of many.
Yeah. Let's do this then, because let's talk about the electromagnetic body.
Right.
Okay. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
All right. If I can share my screen again.
Please.
Okay. This is one of my favorite quotes. It ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. By the way, these are quotes from people who isolated the virus, all of whom, these are the four most important papers about it, all said they didn't have the virus. This was the experiment that we did that showed, I won't go through this, but that you get the same cytopathic effect, which proves the existence of a virus even with no virus added, but I won't go through that. This is an alleged picture of the virus, but we now know from this that these are actually just breakdown of kidney cells. Okay, so when you say, okay, what are we made of? Are we really a physical body or are we an electromagnetic body? So somewhere around in the question again, we're going to go back to how do we know, right? That's what's the methodology. So, and let me just point out, there's another methodology which I rely on, which is what have people throughout history said about this phenomena? Like my two favorites are Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. So if you ask every Western person, just about every doctor, every scientist, what are we made of? We're made of cells, right? We have a liver, we're made of liver cells. In Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, never talked about cells, never mentioned cells. They said you have an organ called the liver and you have an electromagnetic flow through that organ. But in 1859, a guy named Rudolf Virchow said, no, we're made of cells and all living things are made of cells. And then came the genetic theory and evolution and all infectious disease, germ theory, et cetera. So here is what we call a cell. Everybody agrees with this, although I just want to point out, this is not an actual photograph, right? This is a picture. So we should be careful of that, because pictures may not be true. And you see the cell, and it has a nucleus, and it has a ribosome and a cytoplasm and microtubules and rough endoplasmic reticulum and a bunch of other things. So our quest is to say, how did they come up with the idea that there's a ribosome? Now, a ribosome is extremely important because it's the part where mRNA is made into protein, right? So that's what these shots are all about. Not only that, it's important because we're made essentially of proteins and water, essentially. There's minerals and some other things. And it's important to know, where are the proteins made in this cell? This is the unit of a living thing. So they're made in the ribosomes, according to Western science. So the thing, the structure that we're made of is made in the ribosome. Now, the first thing that I noticed about that is the word. So what does a ribosome mean? A ribosome means rib from the body, the soma. And I thought when I heard that, something like, wait a minute, I've heard that a living being, a human being, is made from the rib of the body somewhere else, right? Like Adam and Eve. Like Eve was made from the rib of the body of Adam. So that made me interested in, can we demonstrate a ribosome is true? Now, how did they show this ribosome? First of all, I want to point out that every picture of a ribosome is a perfect circle. And this is a two-dimensional picture. So here's how they showed the ribosome exists. They took a living tissue, like a liver or a kidney cell or tissue, and they ground it up in a blender, and they froze it to 120 degrees below zero or so. They put acids and other chemicals in it. They evaporated all the water, and then they put a heavy metal stain on it, like osmium or tungsten or something. And then they shot an electron beam that also gets rid of all the water and makes it into dust. That's the methodology of finding these circular pictures. And I would ask anybody who's listening, if we did this to your hand, in other words, we want to know what your hand is made of and what it does, and we cut your hand off your body, and then we macerate it in a blender, we dehydrate it into a powder, heavy metal stain, shoot an electron beam, and we have a heap of powder on the table, and then we say, that's your hand. Everybody would say, that is not a good way to show what it does.
So let me just interrupt you for a second, because one of the things I've always wondered about is why we haven't made microscopes like the ones that Rife made. In other words,
right.
Rife made microscopes that would allow us to see the living systems, you know, alive.
And, yes.
And they were captured and destroyed. I don't know to what size you could look down through them, so I don't know.
You couldn't see a ribosome, too small.
But I'm assuming the technology exists so that you could make, you, make
maybe,
one.
But it's never been, there's no science paper that shows it.
Well, but here's the thing. Well, you have to understand, in my world, the fact that there's no published science paper is meaningless.
Because it's meaningless to me, except that's how they show it.
Right. No, but there's trillions of dollars building and operating things that they don't show.
Yes.
So it is absolutely inconceivable to me that if Rife made those microscopes in the 30s, that they don't have microscopes that can observe living cells, you know, down to a ribosome.
Right. That's my point. And so if they had that, they would do it. They do have it. They could do it. They don't do it, because they're not there. And
of
that
course
would
they do it.
No,
of course they're doing it. They keep the secret.
You, Catherine, you missed my point. They don't show the ribosomes, and so they don't want you to see the pictures, because it would prove that the ribosomes don't exist.
I don't think they show us anything because they don't want us to know anything about anything.
Right. Well, that, and this is one example.
Right. But so, I think they're millions.
Yeah, but the point, the reason, if they have a microscope that can show us the ribosome but doesn't, that is more evidence. But let me finish this. The question is, so they took this cell, and here's, you know, pictures of circular ribosomes, right? You can see them. You can see them. All ribosomes are circular. Now, what are the chances if this is circular in a two-dimensional picture, it was a sphere in real life? Has to be. So it's like you take an orange and you put it in a blender and you cut it into little pieces. And what are the chances that every piece is a perfect circle? The answer is zero. And so there is no actual evidence that this is an anatomical structure, which means there's no evidence that the mRNA can be translated into protein in any site in the cytoplasm. And as I'll talk about in a minute, there's no evidence that mRNA can be translated into protein at all. And let me go further that. So then they say, okay, well, so there is no evidence that there's a ribosome, because this is the evidence. And then they say, here's another factor in this. They say, meaning all geneticists, all molecular biologists, the way this works is you have DNA in the nucleus, it makes mRNA in the nucleus, goes out of the holes called nuclear pores in the nuclear membrane, goes to the ribosome, and then is translated into mRNA. That's what they say. Here's the problem. You can do a probe in tissue with a nucleus. You put a probe in the nucleus, a probe in the cytoplasm. The pH is different. That's a fact, which means the hydrogen ions can't go from one space to the next, the cytoplasm to the nucleus. So we have a problem. How do you get the mRNA out of the nucleus into the cytoplasm when the mRNA is thousands of times or more bigger than a hydrogen ion? Or put it another way, you supposedly have a door that lets elephants out of the structure, but it doesn't let mosquitoes in. How do you do that? So there's no answer because you can't even see the pores. So then they invent a thing called an endoplasmic reticulum. Well, it doesn't go out a hole, it goes out a tube. You see the tube there called the endoplasmic reticulum. So it goes out of the tube, and then it exits from the tube into the ribosomes, which are attached to the tube. The problem is there still has to be a door, and you still have to let the elephants out without letting the mosquitoes in. But here's the other problem. If you look at the endoplasmic reticulum, which is these lines here, or you go back, you see it's attached to the nuclear membrane and the cell membrane, right? You see that, attached. And so there's 20 of them or 50 of them in the cell. And yet, if you look at a living cell like Rife, you see the nucleus doing 360s.
Right.
So how do you get 20 ropes attached from the outside to the nucleus, all 20 ropes tethering it, and the thing in the middle is going round and round and it doesn't get tangled up? And the answer is, it can't work like that. There's no way out. It can't have ropes attached. And here's the final thing. A guy named Harold Hillman proved that you can get these exact pictures of ribosomes in dead and dying tissue that couldn't possibly have ribosomes. These are stained gas bubbles. The endoplasmic reticulum is fracture lines in the cytoplasm because of the freezing and drying technique. These things are artifacts. They don't exist.
Just say me another way. What I've assumed is that if we wanted to understand both the the biochemical body and the electromagnetic body on an integrated basis, that we would have lots of microscopes that allowed us to look at things on a living basis, and all of our models would be based on what we observed from that living, you know, from observations of living cells.
That's what you see when you see a living cell. All you see, there's no ribosome, there's no endoplasmic reticulum, there's no Golgi apparatus. By the way, let's talk about just for a minute, synapses in nerves. Now, you talked about all these drugs and everything that are, people are being poisoned. Many of them have to do with synapses. So, and receptors on cell membranes, which have never been seen. ACE2 receptor, never been seen. Opiate receptor, never been seen. And a synapse in a nerve, it's fundamental to neurology. You get the nerve and it goes down, and then it crosses the synapse and you get these neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. And so I go looking for a picture of a synapse, because if you dissect it and use a light microscope, there are no gaps. And besides, if you think about how fast, like if you stick a pin in your foot and you go, ouch, it's instantaneous, which means it can't possibly have gone through the 20 synapses gaps along the way. Physically impossible. So here's a picture of a synapse, but that's not real. That's a computer picture. So there's another fancy picture. So nobody has seen a synapse except there. Now you say, where? Well, in the middle, you see this thing called SY, and that's just a stain, dehydrated tissue that broke apart, and you see a synapse. There is no synapse.
But we're back to the same thing. I'm not competent or qualified to understand, let alone decide or present the debate. All I can tell you is that it is inconceivable to me that we can understand anything about the human body without observing it alive.
Exactly. Exactly, Kath, that's exactly what I'm saying. And so at the end of the day, all this staining, drying, electron beams, freezing, it's all, excuse my French, bullshit.
Because I can't debate that. I'm
showing you that this ribosome can't exist. And, you know, you look at the blood-brain barrier, we're all like, and so here's a picture of a liver with the blood and the brain and the liver cells. Looks exactly the same as the brain and the blood vessels. There is no blood-brain barrier.
Well, I don't want to interrupt. So why don't you keep going and we go through everything you want to present?
So here is a list of all the things. And by the way, if anybody is really interested in this, they have to read Harold Hillman, because he's the one who said a ribosome is a gas bubble of a dead and dying tissue stained. There is no synapses. I can show you how you make a synapse by taking a tube of water and dehydrating it just like they do, and it breaks apart, it rolls up on the ends. That's what they mistakenly call a synapse. There is no endoplasmic reticulum. There is no immune system. There is no neurotransmitters. There's no blood-brain barrier. And by the way, if we're made of protein and we have 200,000 proteins and we have 20,000 genes, and the central dogma says one gene makes one protein, immediately we know the whole thing is hooey, because we have 180,000 proteins, which are unaccounted for by genes. And we don't know how the mRNA gets out of the nucleus, because it can't possibly let an elephant out and keep the mosquitoes from getting in. Now, we get to your question. What are we made of? When you look in a real microscope of living tissue, you can see a thin membrane. You see organized water. You see a circular nucleus. And you see mitochondria. And that's it. So we know those things are real. And so, again, now we're a little bit on hypothesis instead of proving what isn't there. But what this looks like is we have an organized water, then we have embedded in that a kind of a dome shape, which may even have an antenna sticking out of it. And then it's sort of has a thicker shell. This is exactly like what you would expect with Jell-O, right? It's organized water with proteins embedded in the Jell-O that organize the water into a living crystal. Now, I'm not the first one who said this is what we're made of. Mei-Hwan Ho says organisms are dynamically coherent. They appear to be crystalline. Sven Gorky said, you control the structure of water, you control the world. Marcel Vogel, person who knew the most about crystals, said we are fluid, a kind of liquid crystal, a mesophase, mesomorphic transition, which is affected by our emotions, our thoughts, our electromagnetic fields, and all the things that you've so carefully documented, the mind control and the images, etc. All this is downloaded into the water to create structure. We even know that when the water disintegrates, the structure disintegrates. We see that in the MRI. An MRI machine is picking up the structure of water. And when you poison the structure of water with arsenic, with lead, with bad thoughts, with bad food, with not enough minerals, with heavy metals, you deteriorate the structure of water. And then you can see that, and we call that cancer. And we see this in the Bible. It's created out of water and light, right? So we have the electromagnetic field being downloaded through the nucleus into the water. Every living thing from water, that's the Quran. I was born into the water and the spirit, and the Vedas, the whole universe is made of water. And I just want to show you, this is exactly the image of dome, capacitors, antenna, download into water. Who made this? What were they seeing there? Or you see it here. Yeah. Dome, antenna, capacitors, downloaded into water. You see it there. Antenna, dome, capacitors, downloaded into water. There, they knocked the antenna off. There, that's the different shape of the water. So what were they looking at? Now, let me just show you one more thing. So how do these structures get made, right? Mm-hmm. We are made of proteins organizing the water, just like Jell-O, right? You take Jell-O, you put proteins, water, then you heat it. It unfolds the proteins, organizes the water. By the way, before I get into this, this explains everything to do with healing. Why are you sick? Somebody poisoned your water. How do you get out of it? You heat up the water, right? It's called a fever. You dissolve the gel, you make it run, that's called mucus, then you reconstitute a more perfect gel. Fevers, hyperthermia, sweat lodges, all that. Or somebody puts some poison grapes in your water. How do you get it out? You dissolve the Jell-O, get it to run out, then you reconstitute it. That's what we call being sick. Or you have a negative or harmful electromagnetic influence into your water.
Right.
And that's causing a distortion in what you make, your actual physical structure. So what do? You give a better electromagnetic field, i.e. homeopathy, Rife therapies, electromagnetic healing, laying on of hands, prayer. Or put a needle in somebody and change their electromagnetic field through their organs. Every single natural healing technique can be explained by that simple model I just gave.
Right.
And then just to finish, a woman friend of ours, Veda Austin, said, okay, can you prove that water and fields can make structure, right? That's what we're talking about. So she takes a dish of water and puts a wedding invitation underneath it and puts it in the freezer and said, show me the wedding invitation or show me this image. And what does the water show her? A picture of a wedding ring. Now, why didn't the water sing, here comes the bride? Because water doesn't have a vocal cord, right? Water can only use crystal pictures. And so it perfectly was able to show this. And we have hundreds, thousands of these. And then one of my favorite ones, and I always ask people, Catherine, what is falling down?
What is falling down?
Yes.
London Bridge.
That's what the water said. Exactly.
Isn't that funny? What did you ask the water? What did you do?
What is falling down?
But I mean, what did you do to inspire that to the water?
We asked it, what's falling down?
Oh, great. Oh, fabulous. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
So you can get, even once you've done thousands of these, you can get an idea of how water creates living structures.
Right.
Now, I'll shut up in a minute, but I totally agree with you. Once you see this whole panorama, you then commit to only studying life when it's living. Exactly what you said. And then we get rid of all of conventional medicine because all of it is based on studying, you know, dead stuff. And then we have a few surgeries and a few other things.
I think the problem is the lies are much bigger than that. In the sense that, you know, it's not just medicine and science, but our whole paradigm of how reality works and how we should interact with reality. It's a hyper-materialist paradigm, which is just flat dead wrong. Because we're pretending, if you look at the part of the reality that's invisible because it's electromagnetic and we don't see it with the naked eye, and then you look at the part of reality which is covert and therefore invisible, you don't see it. The vast majority of our reality is invisible to us. Right.
Well, so here's the key. Here's what I would say about that. In that case, so how do I know there's a pen? Because it's visible. How do I know there's a piece of paper? Because it's visible. When I'm starting to investigate things that I don't have a sensory impression of, at least I don't, then you have to do science.
No, that's where I disagree.
Or you have to.
You have to do experience. In other words. So for example, the way I learned a lot of what you teach is I got thrown out of the establishment and I couldn't go to a hospital. I couldn't go to a doctor. It wasn't safe. I had to go without.
Thank God.
Yeah. No, it saved my life. It absolutely saved my life. But I had to go, you know, totally without. If I was lucky, I could borrow money and go to a nurse practitioner and occasionally get an antibiotic if I needed. But otherwise, I had to go without. And so I tried things, not because I believed they would work, but because I was told they would work and I had nothing else. So I tried it. And then as I tried it, what I discovered is, oh my God, prayer works. Asking for help works. You know, natural remedies work. And the whole world is completely and utterly different. You know, then I started to work with energetic healers and I discovered, you know, people thousands of miles away could figure out what was happening and let me know what it was just by thinking. Do you know what I mean? So I discovered, you know, that I had been a hyper-materialist and the whole basis of my reality was different. When I first got booted out of the establishment, I had been studying morphogenic fields. And the reason I'd been studying morphogenic fields is because the money, I was building databases that could look at financial ecosystems within a community or neighborhood. And what I was discovering was the actual economic behavior of a neighborhood could be explained by morphogenic fields. It could not be explained by anything I learned at the Wharton Business School. It all operated around knowledge and shared knowledge. and how that knowledge works through culture and economics and a whole lot of things. And I didn't want to talk to anybody about it because they just couldn't even fathom it. And then I got booted out and I started into a process of serious physical and legal and financial and physical harassment. And I realized, oh my God, all of their techniques and tactics are designed to isolate me within the field. They believe in morphogenic fields. They're practicing morphogenic fields. They're using their understanding of morphogenic fields and shared intelligence to manipulate and control. And that's when I knew this was real. You know, yeah, morphogenic fields.
Couldn't agree more.
I didn't pretend to understand them, but I said, this is the basis of our economic reality. And the other thing is, it's also the basis. The reason I was successful on Wall Street is I intuitively had an understanding of how to build and change morphogenic fields. And most of my partners were hypermaterialists and had no clue what I was doing or what I was up to. They just knew it worked.
So, and all I would say about that, because I totally agree, is that it turns out, because I know some about morphogenic fields, and that's what I'm talking about, essentially. And they can be studied using the scientific method and right. through experience. And so
but
you do
can they be studied without living microscopes?
Yeah, you don't need microscopes. In fact, the Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, they didn't need microscopes right. because right. there's nothing to be gained from that. They had a living experience, a scientific understanding based on observation, essentially controlling variables. That's how you do it. If I feel this and I don't feel this in this situation, that you can actually think in variables. Then you know this is energy moving through your liver. I can put a needle here or give you burn your thing right. here. Or even think it, because once you understand right. the system, you can pray it, think it, and then you can say, if I pray it, what effect do I get? If I don't pray it, that's right. called science.
Right.
This business of, well, we don't know if this exists, so we're going to do these things and we're not going to control it because we can't control it. That's not science. That's magical. Irrelevant no, but, thinking.
But real people with real lives and real families have to discover and work these things out many times by experience because they don't have access.
That's fine.
You know, and they listen to experts and they try stuff. I mean, I learned most of this by trying things and seeing what worked and what didn't work.
Right.
And also by looking and studying the population and the economy, I finally realized, oh, this is really simple. There's a great poisoning going on, and it's a combination of all these different things. And what's happening is, you know, it's like an epidemic, but it's an epidemic where everybody dies of their own weakness because you're just increasing toxicity and lowering the immune system, and then everybody dies of their weakness.
Except and, saying lowering the immune system implies that there is such a thing as an immune system, which they invented to make you think there were viruses.
So
there is no
what
immune
I would
system.
Say, I would say, I don't, you know, we're back to what I don't know, but I would say there's a basic physical health. That's what I would call the immune system.
Yeah, but so, it's not, it's a technical word, which means a very specific thing, which can be proven to not actually
okay.
be.
So I'll say
so that's what I'm trying to do, Catherine, is clarify your wording so you get closer to reality.
Because
you already know what you're talking about.
I think I'm very close to reality, but I'll use the word constitution. They weaken your constitution and they raise your toxicity, and then you die of that part of you that's weak.
Got it.
Right. Okay.
You got it.
So right.
So, no immune system necessary. And let me
well,
say
but
another
there is
thing.
Something called a constitution.
That's different.
In my mind, it's not different because I'm from Hickory Valley. I'm not a scientist, and I can't relate to all that complexity. So, you know,
it's
I have
not
to
complex. Just stick with what you experience.
Yeah, but what you have
you.
To understand in my world, little invisible things that make you sick, I couldn't care less which one You know, I know that little invisible
We're back
things
to
can make
that.
you sick.
Let's forget about that.
No, but that's, you know, to me, the major constant invisible things that make you sick are poisons.
Yes, that's what
right.
we said.
The human race is being poisoned. Okay, so then I go through this process of discovering, you know, that the fundamental paradigm is what I would describe as electromagnetic.
Yeah, it's what
and,
I said.
Right. So then I discover that, but I discover that through experience, not through science. So then I realize, oh, we're being poisoned. Now, the next thing that happens is I start to get all these investment advisory clients who introduce me. Now, I've always known to avoid vaccines. You know, from the time I turned 21, I knew they killed you. I avoided them. So I was blessed by inside information, you know, to that extent to avoid them myself. But I ended up with all these clients who had vaccine injured children.
Right.
And then I started a process for 10 years of reading and studying and saying, you know, if they're poisoning people in the food and they're poisoning people in the air and they're poisoning people by putting arsenic down their well, what is so special about an injection? Why the need to poison people with an injection? What is this about? What are they trying to accomplish and why?
Yeah.
And that is a question I've thought a lot about for 20 years, and I still don't know the answer. I mean, I
it's
have lots
simple.
Of theories.
It's simple. The purpose of the modern medical system is to keep people sick. Not the individual doctors are not thinking that. The system, just like the economic system, is there to keep people impoverished. You know that.
So I agree with that. My problem is that in my experience, anything which is this big and on which there's this much money, they stack functions.
What do you mean by that?
In other words, there's never just one goal.
Right. Control, sick, manipulation, financial gain, all kinds of reasons.
Right. So it comes down to, you know, I get control and I weaken you.
Yes.
But I also believe from watching things that they're prototyping lots of different kinds of things.
Yes, I agree.
So there's a huge amount of experimentation going on around what is a human, how can you manipulate them, how can you integrate digital technology, can you put an operating system in them. I don't begin to, you know, I mean, I could have a field day imagining all the different things they've tried.
Right. I just to be clear, I put all that under the rubric of they're there to make your life miserable. And they have creative ways, which you have studied probably more than I have, of the individual components of that misery, like
so
manipulating
most,
you, et cetera.
Right. The most interesting aspects to me are the theories of what these various poisons, including the injections, can do to not only your energetic intelligence and being, but to your soul.
Yes.
To your spiritual powers and your spiritual evolution. So
yes.
One theory is that the injections, the mRNA injections, make it impossible for your soul to leave this dimension and go elsewhere. It traps you on the earth. That's one theory.
Right. I mean, I don't know that that's true, but I don't know that it isn't true either.
Right. So it's the manipulation of the energetic that I find very interesting. And I try to understand in part because their huge success, their greatest weapon, is their ability to manipulate people's intelligence without their realizing that they're doing it.
Yes, that's certainly a huge part of it, which is why I'm trying to bring some intelligence back by thinking in a logical way. And maybe it won't work, and that's fine. I mean, all I can do is do what I do and see what happens. And you're doing what you do and see what happens. But that's right. They're all these agendas. And
well, but I think you and I both really want people to protect themselves from the great poisoning and free themselves from the control grid. Right?
You know, it's an interesting question because the easy answer is, oh yeah, I'm a good guy, so I say yes. But I've almost gotten to the point where I can't control what other people do or think. And so I gave, you know, like I've learned this partly from being an athlete, because I've been an athlete most of my young life. And if there's anything you learn, no matter even if it's basketball or golf or you just do you, right?
Right.
You do you. And, you know, Steph Curry says he doesn't see anybody else. He just does his shot. And if they block it, they block it. If they don't, they don't. It's no concern of his.
Right.
And to me, the power and the beauty of this, of life, is in that. And I want everybody to do that. And so I am not so much anymore concerned about, oh, Tom's crazy or Tom's this or Tom's that. I'm going to do me. I'll explain why I think it. However people see it or what they do, it's up to them. I think if I let them be free, that's the problem. I'm not trying to manipulate anybody. If everybody stopped trying to manipulate people, we'd be a lot better off.
No, but I, you know, and so everybody has a different mission and everybody should do their one piece. But what I, so we just reorganized our content into what I call the Building Wealth curriculum. And my goal is somebody comes into Solari and in the most comfortable processes possible, goes through the steps. And if they want it, they can access the information that helps them in all the different areas navigate their reality in a way where they get whatever they want in this world.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I want them to have a good map of how the world works and where the risks are and what they're dealing with so that they can navigate without getting tricked and they can serve their own purpose in life.
Totally. And that's
Right.
exactly what we're doing. We have a map, or I have a map of how this works. We're this month setting up an online clinic so that people who have problem, I'm not doing well, my foot hurts, you know, I have lupus or whatever. They go and they talk to a doctor who I've trained, and they have a movement and they learn how to make food. And yeah, we have a blueprint for how to do it for anybody who wants. You want to do it, come join us. But it's, to me, it is totally up to them.
Absolutely.
I'm not
Absolutely.
concerned with forcing anybody, convincing anybody,
Right.
nothing.
No, you want people who come to the Oasis to drink, but it's because they want to, not because you're right.
Same as you. And you're doing it wonderfully in money, and not just money. Almost an insult to say that's what you're doing. You're doing it with life and finance and how to live and how to think.
Well, to
And
me,
that's what I'm doing.
it's one thing. In
Yeah,
other
it's
words,
one thing.
you know, you can, let's say you work your whole life to make $5 million and you lose it in one afternoon by having your grandchild injected and poisoned, and now it's going to cost you $5 million to care for them. So that, you know, so I like an integrated approach.
Let me just suggest one thing, and I don't want to beat this, you know. Well, in some ways I do, but the common thread here is, I would guess that, and I'm not sure about this, but you would agree that it's helpful for people to know that the currency situation is based on a fraud.
Right.
That and so it's complicated. You know, I've spent a lot of years back, you know, the creature from Jekyll and whatever, all that stuff.
Right.
I'm no newbie to that the Federal Reserve. I've actually read that book of the guy who was trying to stop the Federal Reserve. I don't remember the name of the book, but the whole thing on what predicting exactly what would happen, the Federal Reserve is a crock, right? Everybody, that's a complicated thing. And it's so helpful to know that our financial system is based on a fraud. And that's the same with the virus thing. It's the same with the physical basis of the human of living tissue. It's based on a fraud, as I described. Same thing. And I think you would.
Yeah, but here's where I would take the position. If I were to tell all my neighbors in Hickory Valley that the currency is based on a fraud, they would say, sure, I know. And they would go, they would keep using the currency.
Well, then you have to do more things, right?
Well, but here's the thing. The you know, I think it's a pretty popular notion. I'm just, you know, when I first moved to Hickory Valley, I went to a meeting at our church, and somebody was asking during the business meeting, why do you think that's true? And another person who had just moved to town from the north said, oh, well, I read it in the Hickory Valley. And the whole congregation burst out laughing because it was so funny that anybody would believe anything they read in the New York Times. That was funny.
Yeah.
In 2000. Same. Okay. So in other words, knowing that the control grid is lying to you is different than figuring out how to get out of it. Knowing that the currency is a fraud is different than finding a way to operate without it.
Yeah. Totally.
Right.
But Catherine, if somebody said to you, if I came in on this show and said, Catherine, you know, I don't know, I've been looking into this and I am sure that the way that the United States makes money is the US government decides on how much money there is and they print the money and it's real and it's backed by real assets and the real faith and goodwill of the American people, you would say, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, that's absurd.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying about the virus.
Right, but I don't think where I
like
disagree.
Nobody thinks that.
Well, but here, where you and I disagree is I don't think educating them about the virus fraud is going to change their ability to get out of the control grid.
Maybe,
I mean, it may for a few people, they may say, voila, okay, it changes my life. I do think understanding how their electromagnetic intelligence is controlled and manipulated, I think that can help them get out of the control grid.
Yeah, but I think it's the same as once people, you mean the U.S. government borrows money from the banks? The banks, like, why would they do that? Why don't they just make the money themselves? That we're a sovereign country. Right. Wait a minute. And so you say, are you sure?
You could just print the money yourselves and give it to the bankers.
Right.
Just give it to the bankers.
Yeah. Just give it to them. What you say? How do you know that? Well, you say, why else would the U.S. government be in debt? Like, you're not in debt if you make your own money, right? Because obviously, if you're in debt, you borrowed it from. So do you think the U.S. government not, well, I know the U.S. government's in debt, what, $50 trillion or I don't know how much. So then you prove, the guy thinks, yeah, you know, she's right. If you borrow money, if you're in debt, that means you must have borrowed money. Therefore, somebody else must be making the money. I don't want somebody, why don't you let me make the money? Let's give it to me. I'll make the money because then I'll make enough.
But I go back to, what helps people get out of the control grid? You know, to me, during COVID-19, the single most successful tactic was fear and mind control.
Yeah.
And I think that very few people in the new media understand the mind control technology and how it works and how it manipulates. And it's almost as powerful today as it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And my frustration is, you know, and that includes whatever is happening with the cellular technology, because whether it's, you know, the invisible technology coming in on a TV or coming in on a Zoom or coming in on a smartphone, you know, those are the avenues that they are using to manipulate our electromagnetic thoughts, reality, body, including, if I'm right, making people sick and using it intentionally to make people sick.
Absolutely. All that. But I do think that if somebody hears, you know, she's right. They're outsourced the money. They're going to say, give me that pitchfork. I'm sick of these people. Maybe not. because people are so dumbed down
no,
and drugged.
No. It's not because they're dumbed down. It's not. And that's what it took me many years. I did a series on the Salieri Report that you do not have time to listen to called Deep State Politics. And I went through all the tactics. They are being they are under individual surveillance. They are being tracked by AI and software. Yes. And if they don't behave, they won't be able to feed their kids next week.
Right.
So a lot of times they go along, not because they think it's right or not because they want to, but because they want to feed their kids.
Yeah, no, totally. Right. Same with this.
Right.
People say to me all the time, I know you're right, but I have a job and all that. All right. I think we've covered a lot here, Kath.
Well, but no, we haven't covered the most important issue, and that is, how do we help people see that there is this electromagnetic reality and understanding it and understanding how it works in your body and your life can really change how you look at the world, including improving your finances, I would like to point out.
Yes, totally.
It can have a major impact on improving your finances.
I couldn't agree more.
Right. So this is at the very core of building wealth. How do we help people see their electromagnetic reality? How do we help them learn about it? How do they experience the power of beginning to get that knowledge working in their life? That, you know, for me, it was an incredible breakthrough that saved my life.
You know what I think the answer to that, if funnily enough, is? And I would just say, preface this, maybe I would say I'm no expert in this particular subject of tactics. But off the top of my head, I think the way that happens mostly is people get sick or in financial ruin. Then they get a child with autism, or maybe it's not them who gets sick. And they say to themselves, you know what? Screw this guy. I'm not listening to him anymore, or her. Or they're stealing my money. They're stealing my ability, like you said, to feed my children. I've had enough of this. I'm going to go look somewhere else.
But the person listening to this is saying, I got it. I'm ready. How do I learn to make the shift? What do I do? What do I read? What do I watch?
I would say one thing, commit to knowing what's not true. Just that. Just commit. If you hear something that's not true, or you see, you have some sense, this is not true. This doesn't add up. The money is not made by the government. The viruses don't exist. There's no such thing as a ribosome. Then you go and use the technique of disproving. Proving what's real is really tricky. Disproving what's not real, that's the way to go. Because at the end of the rainbow, you'll be home and everything will start to snowball and your life will be better and better and better because you believe less and less BS.
Well, but remember, letting go of the BS is good, but you have to embrace that which is true.
You don't know what's true yet. I made that mistake over and over again.
I
know the heart wasn't a pump. I proved it. And then by magic, the real, what it does comes in.
But those
are the steps.
But you can move towards the truth and try things and find things and grow things that are true.
Like Sherlock Holmes said, get rid of the nonsense first.
But there's nonsense coming in there's new nonsense coming in every day. So it's a constant, it's a journey of constantly getting rid of that which is not true and seeking and nurturing that which you find to be true. And it's experiential and it's simply a journey. It's never over.
Exactly. But I have a unproven hypothesis, which is guiding my life in a sense, that there's a kind of a magic involved in this. The more I get rid of that which isn't true, somehow, like the next day or whatever, the idea of what is comes in. I don't know how it works. I see it over and over again. So I've learned every mistake practically I make is believing the dominant narrative too much or too quickly jumping to what is true when I should stick to what isn't and just let it come in.
Well, I will say this. There is some dynamic, which I don't understand, that by allowing untruths to stick around, you waste all this space that keeps the truth from coming.
Exactly. It's like demons. They call them like archons or so. I don't know. You know, like Carlos Castaneda talked about that, these like things that hang around.
Right.
And once you get rid of the things, then it's a beautiful world and you see the truth.
Thomas Meyer and I had a great interview about elemental beings and how lies create these elemental beings that then, you know, it's like a constituency for the lies.
So if you get rid of them, somehow the good stuff just comes in and you'll see it for what it is. And it's a stress-free technique. That's what I'm going.
So I just have to say, I don't know whether viruses exist or not, but if the government says you should be worried about one, for sure it doesn't exist.
Yeah. That's, I used to say, like, if Al Gore believes it, then I don't, but I have 100,000 Al Gores now. And I have a bunch of people in my life who I pay very close attention to, because I know if they agree with me, then I must be wrong.
Okay. Well, you know, every year we publish a list of books for the next year. So is there any place on your website where I can come and find the, you know, the documentaries or books that were the most useful to you in getting rid of the lies?
Well, in biology, it's Harold Hillman.
Okay.
For sure. Okay. If you, I can tell anybody who's interested, science, biology, medicine, if you haven't read this book, it's called, it's hard to find, I must admit, The Case for a New Paradigm in Cell Biology and Neurobiology, you are what I would consider uneducated in biology and medicine.
Well, that's me.
Because he went 50 years imploring anybody to debate him, debunk him, tell him what he got wrong. He went through the history of ribosomes, the history of neurotransmitters, the history of the immune system, every study, and he summarized it. And at the end of the day, it's exactly like what you said. Go with what you experience as a living thing.
So watching your presentation was very frustrating for me. Because as soon as I got to the Netherlands, I reordered, I have them in Hickory Valley, but I reordered them so I can read them here, every book available from Mei Wan Ho. And they're sitting here and I keep getting frustrated because I don't have time to read them. But you would say her books would be very useful.
No, her books are way too technical and
okay.
You know, this guy, like Gilbert Ling, you know, proved there's no sodium potassium pump and no receptors, all this ACE2 stuff. It's nonsense. But nobody can read that. I mean, I can read it just because I've spent my life reading stuff like this. But this guy puts it into real language.
Okay.
And so that's biology. And
so that's probably why I haven't read it yet. I was waiting for you to tell me to get Hillman.
Yeah, get Hillman.
Okay, well, tell us again your website and how to find you and follow your work.
Yeah, it's drtomcowan.com and drcowansgarden.com.
And I just have to give a plug because your son runs the garden, right?
Yeah, he runs
and
both.
He's fantastic. And so you'll also get a great experience there at both websites. Yeah.
He's the boss. Which is good because he's much better boss than I ever was.
I just know from interacting with him, but he strikes me to be a very good businessman.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Okay. All well, right, Dr. Tom Cowan, thank you very much. You have a wonderful day. Okay.
You too, Catherine. It's always a pleasure. Bye bye.
Always a pleasure.